It is time for No Filter Sports. September 3rd, 2020. Labor Day is around the corner. As I said last week, where did the summer go? We're already into the fall, and we may get Big Ten football in the fall, but let's hold that off for a second. I got a friend who says, I don't like it when you guys, my friend Alan, I don't like you doing obituaries. It reminds me how old we are and some of these guys I haven't heard of. But to me, the lead story...
Then learn something.
He doesn't like you already, so don't antagonize him.
I don't care. I don't like him either. He sounds like a jerk.
Oh, God. Oh, am I going to hear it? Anyway.
Like, well, Brandon always says one of the things he loves about engineering and producing our show is that we talk as older men about guys he's never heard of. Brandon has a curious mind. He wants to know who these guys were.
Oh, Bob, stop it. Let's go, Eli. Come
he
on.
Has heard, he, has heard of the, he has heard of this guy, Tom Seaver. Died at 75 yesterday. Tom Terrific, the first big star for the Mets. Now, you guys know, as I became a sports reporter in Detroit, I, of course, adopted the Tigers as my team, but I'd always been a National League fan growing up as a kid. I saw my first Dodgers game when the year they moved out in 57, and I became a Mets fan. And they were delightfully awful for the first 7-8 years of their existence. They started in 62, lost 120 games. And by 67, when Tom Seaver was a rookie, they were finished 10th again, 9th the next season. And then in 1969, behind Tom Terrific's 25 wins, they come from 10 games back in August to defeat the Cubs and go on to win the World Series. And it was amazing. And that's why they called him the Amazing Mets. And he was Tom Terrific. And, long story with his career. He went on to had a terrible breakup with the Mets. But anyway, before I go on and on and on about Seaver, please feel free to comment. Anyone.
Let Denny go first.
We can talk now?
Yeah, you can talk.
I thought
that
was a question.
I was getting fired up, but I got more to say.
I knew him not real well, but I probably did 20 shows with the guy. And always nice, great with the people. But you noticed somewhere in the middle 90s when he was doing shows, that something had happened. And of course, which I think that's about the time we found out he had Lyme disease at one time. And then unfortunately he got Lyme disease again. And I mean, this really crippled him.
And then he got dementia, Danny.
Yeah, Lewy body dementia.
It started to cause a dementia. And now to die because of the COVID-19, I only hope people take this to heart. There's a message there with Tom, besides being Tom Terrific. He was just a good guy and dying of COVID-19. Listen, Tom didn't do much the last couple of years of his life. And he certainly wasn't doing anything since the COVID had set in, and he got it anyway. So you never know where it's coming from. You know, the guy had 60. I'll tell you, a couple of things are amazing. 61 shutouts in 20 years. Mm. Listen to this now. Seaver struck out 3,640 guys. He had 300 wins, 3,000 strikeouts, and a career ERA below 3 for his entire career.
Three Cy Youngs, sixth in the all-time strikeout list, 311.
The only other guy was Johnson.
Walter Johnson.
Walter Johnson, yeah. Okay. So, boy, what a great career, what a good guy. And the last time I saw him, about 2 years ago, maybe three.
Really?
He was having trouble. He was just...
I have, as you might expect, a little
different problem with the signature and things like that. But he was still gracious to everybody. He worked hard when he was at all these functions. Just a good guy, really a good
Bob,
guy.
Go ahead.
And his wife was a really nice lady.
Well, I first of all, I want to say this, and I got a question for Denny. I think Tom Seaver might have been the greatest pitcher I ever saw. He was unbelievable, of course. And Denny McClain was one of the greatest pitchers of all time for a period of a few years. Did you look at Seaver or Koufax or any of those guys ever and think, you know what? I'm not as good as that guy is.
No. Listen,
so you always thought you were as good as Seaver
better than
or Koufax.
You're in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, you can't go out there half-assed. The glass can't be half full. And you got to, once you go out there, you take charge 110%. I mean, you are the best on that mound that day, no matter how you position it, you are the best that day. Yeah. And, you know, guys, you know, the game is crazy. He didn't have much arm trouble during his whole career either. Not a lot. And 20 years, think about that. 20 years to throw a fastball, slider, curveball. Just think about that. Mm-hmm. That is an amazing statistic. Just amazing.
In 1976, free agency hit baseball, and Tom Seaver complained that he was only making $225,000. Guys were making a lot more money, including Nolan Ryan, his former Met teammate, who was now with the Angels. And Dick Young, we talked about Dick Young with when Rob Parker was on. He was this most irascible New York sports writer of all time. He had his column called Clubhouse Confidential, and a lot of his sources came from team owners and team management. He was more on the management side than the player's side. So he wrote in 76, when Seaver was bitching for more money, that his wife Nancy was jealous of Ryan. Seaver got very angry because Dick Young dragged his wife into it, was about to sign an extension, and said, no, I want to get out of here. He demanded a trade, and it was called the darkest day in Mets history. They sent him to the Reds for four players. He eventually and starred for the Reds. While none of the four guys they got from were really very good, they got Pat Zachary, Doug Flynn, Steve Henderson, Dan Norman. But if I can give you a little personal note on this, he retires in 86. The Mets had brought him back briefly in 84 and then didn't work. He went somewhere else. So he came to New York to announce his retirement in the spring of 87. I was already in trouble at Channel 7 at the time, because I knew they were going to fire me pretty soon. And I got fired in August of
86. And deservedly
so. Of course, I was terrible. No, but at his retirement news conference, I'm there with a microphone. And Tom Seaver says, you know, I was approached by a local TV station to do the news, and I decided not to do it. And I said, holy, that's me. That's my job that Tom Seaver turned down. But what a great pitcher.
And, I'll tell you this, my Tom Seaver stuff. At the end of his career, he's with the White Sox. I'm no kid. I'm a veteran Major League Baseball reporter now in my 30s. I walk into the White Sox locker room at Tiger Stadium one day, and Seaver's just sitting there by himself in his locker. Not many people there, a couple other guys. So I walked over, why not talk to Tom Seaver? So I introduced myself. We sat down to do an interview. And all of a sudden during the interview, I can't remember what I asked him. It was an innocuous question. He went off on me in a deliberate attempt to embarrass me and started yelling into my microphone at the top of his lungs. So I let him do his little rant. I turned my tape recorder off. I said, thanks, Tim. I know exactly what to do with that.
Bob.
Now man, we go to, what a surprise geez, that somebody went surprise. Off on you.
An innocuous question. Yeah, it must have just been, gee, Tom, what'd you have for breakfast today? And he just went off on you for no reason at all.
Yeah, silence from the peanut gallery, please. Bob, so now I'm in New York, and Seaver is doing the Yankees games on Channel 11. So, of course, I see him in New York and stuff like that. This guy was so arrogant, mailed it in every game, and one Yankees game on Channel 11, I was so upset. He didn't do any prep work. He was Tom Seaver. He didn't have to. He butchered managers' names left and right, and I went on the air that night and ripped him a new one. Next day, headline in the New York Daily News sports section from Bob Raceman, Tom not terrific to Page, and it quoted me and everything I had to say. I didn't like him. I'm sorry. I mean, you know, he was a great pitcher. You know, I sure respected him. But
in that case, he wouldn't be the first one that didn't prepare, because there's a lot of greats, Hall of Famers, that didn't make it as announcers because exactly that. They figured they could just show up and be themselves and not do the hard work. When I worked with Gary Danielson for years, I don't have to mention the names necessarily, because one of the names that he really didn't like, whose son we like to get on the show, is going to be the new Monday Night Football reporter, football play-by-play guy. And Gary did this copious research, but the Hall of Fame quarterbacks, the Greasys and Haydens and guys like that, would just show up and not do the work. Anyway, so Tom Seaver.
There's so many athletes out there with great personalities who are glib and intelligent. They'd kill to have these color commentator jobs. And you look at guys who were so bad on the air, Johnny Unitas, Gale Sayers, Joe Namath, on and on and on and on. And that's how they got their jobs. And they kept them for years just because of who they were.
Well,
but Bob, the most amazing thing is that Tom Seaver would go off on you. Why would he waste his time?
He did. You'd have to ask him that. It's too late now, Danny. But he did.
The only part of that story is what the question was and how it was asked. But let's move on from that. By the way, the Tigers lost last night. They had won six straight games. By the way, a seventh win in
Wednesday
a row.
Wednesday
night. A seventh win in a row would have been the equivalent of a 19-game winning streak, 162-game season. They had won six in a row. They lost to the
Brewers.
But the point is they're going to play Minnesota now five games. The Tigers
five games
in 4 days. 5 games and 4. And Minnesota is the team ahead of them at 22-16. The Tigers are 17-17 that they need to overcome to sneak in to make the playoffs. So it should be
this is a big series.
But there's three teams ahead of them, you know, and it's it's difficult to jump three levels with only 30.
No,
they don't have to win the division.
No. The 7th and 8th place teams get in, and there's only 2 ahead of them right now for the last playoff spot.
Do you really believe they got a shot at the playoffs?
No.
I don't either.
No. Oh, but they have a shot. Well, they have a shot. They have a shot. There's only 27 games left.
Sure, they have a shot. 27 games.
Yeah,
of course they have a shot. So about Wednesday night's game, Tigers get 3 runs in the top of the first. Looks like they're on their way to another victory. So eventually Brewers come back and they tie at 5-5 in the 7th inning. And guess who's coming in? Joe Jimenez. The same guy said should have been sent to Toledo 2 weeks ago because he can't pitch at this level. Not right now. What does he do when he comes to the game? Walk. Hits a guy, single, sack fly, gives the Brewers the lead, 6-5. Garcia came in and did a great job for a while. And then, Milwaukee went on to win 8-5 as Manny Gonzalez, the incompetent home plate umpire, ask Shep about that when he comes on, almost stole the show. And then Tuesday night, I was watching the Brewers broadcast of the game. They had former Major League catcher Bill Schroeder working with a young guy named Bill Levering on these games. And you talk about homers. Milwaukee comes into this game 14-18, and Schroeder says, boy, the Brewers are right where they want to be in the playoff hunt. I mean, the Tigers were 14-14 and so on and so forth. So, you know, Fulmer had a good outing. I think Norris looked pretty good for the most part. And this is a club, you know, that has played well of late. They're getting people excited. I don't understand some of the lineup decisions. Grayson Griner remains in sometimes. And this guy hit a dramatic, you saw this, a dramatic 2-run homer in the 9th inning off the shortstop, Orlando Arcia, who had been brought in to mop up. That made the score 12-1, the final. And
that was Griner, 2 nights ago. Okay, that was 2 nights ago.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. And Griner, along with, you know, the much maligned Kristen Stewart, these guys both remain under the Mendoza line. What's Griner hitting, like 100 now? Mm-hmm. And they remain in the lineup. Though Romine had been hurt, and I guess that's why Griner's been playing so much. I don't like this. If you can't play at the big league level, get your butt to Toledo. Send their butts to Toledo.
Before I comment about the team, I want to talk about the umpires for a minute. Listen, if you're not a smart enough pitcher to throw the ball where the umpire's calling strikes, then you shouldn't be out there. Every umpire has his own territory that he likes to control, that he's comfortable with. I mean, all you got to do is learn who they are and what
did
they,
you watch the game?
They do.
Did you watch the game Wednesday
night? Yeah, I watched part of it. Yeah.
Ridiculous. This guy was missing pitches. It was ridiculous.
A lot of people make mistakes at everything that they do every day. Umpires do too. They'll miss a pitch once in a while.
Once in a while? You didn't see much of the game on Wednesday night. This kid from Milwaukee is almost doing handstands out on the mound.
And
nobody could believe Matt Shepard and Kirk Gibson couldn't believe how bad this guy was.
Well, Matt Shepard
favored the Tigers. Shepard
and Gibson are being paid to kiss everybody's ass. Let's be
easy now.
We'll lift that when Shep comes on. Shep.
We haven't mentioned that Shep is going to be on. You keep on talking about it. So let's say that Matt Shepard's going to be our guest today, okay?
Yes,
coming up a little bit later. A pretty good time to have Matt on, and we'll talk about these various things with him. I'm sure he's got thoughts about all
and
of
one
them.
One other thing about the team. I like the 8 guys that go out there every day. I mean, they just don't have any pitching. No consistency.
Kristen Stewart's hitting 140?
Kristen
Stewart's hitting 140.
Bob, just let me talk.
Come on now. There's other guys that are hitting 330, so come on.
Listen, the eight guys who go out there. Oh, my God.
Oh,
the 8 guys that are playing can play. I like those guys. I think they're a pretty good ball club. They just need a guy that's going to, you know, rack attack. Somebody get hot, and then they got a shot. But the pitching staff, they're a long way away from playoffs and a lot of other things. They need somebody to come in and be the number one guy. And to give somebody, they need a veteran of some kind, 29, 30, 31 years old, who can talk to these kids.
Well, it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be
a little bit more.
He played a little bit better. But, you know, we've given kind of some kudos to Al Avila, who has built a little bit of a team here. And from guys that you didn't expect. How about Willie Castro? I looked it up this morning because Willie Castro is playing pretty well. Cleveland drafted him in 14. He's played for 9 teams. He's played for the Mahoning Valley Scrappers. He's played for the Lynchburg Hillcats. We were down there, Denny, down in Lynchburg years ago.
Yeah, we were.
He's played for the Akron Rubber Ducks. He's played in the Dominican Winter League. And yet, here he is, after 9 teams, he's finally, at the age of 25, sticking with in the big leagues. How about Brian Garcia, draft pick, who Bob really likes out of the bullpen, justifiably so, closed the game out the other night. In the 6th round, they drafted him in 16 out of Miami. And now, 4 years later, he's playing in the big leagues.
So this gets back to what I've been saying, Eli, to Denny, because Denny's been calling for Avila's firing for a year and a half. You got to wait to see if these
he has been.
This is why Tom Seaver bit back at you. You say things that are exaggerations. It's not true.
Brandon and I are going to work on this.
I
only tell the truth, and Brandon and I are going to lift those cuts.
Brandon's going to sort through 3,000 hours of tapes. He's going to find when Denny said that.
And I've been the one who's been saying, you got to give these kids time. Let's see if they're going to develop. And it looks like Avila is going to be right. Now, I did learn something the other day. I learned that this really was not a nothing for nothing trade when poor Cam Maben was sent away again by the Tigers in exchange for a kid named Zach Short. Avila said he is a major league baseball ready infielder right now. I don't know. The kid hit 211 in AAA last year at Iowa. He couldn't make the Cubs this season.
That's a major
and Al says he's MLB ready.
That's a major leaguer, right? 211 in AAA, nonetheless.
In AAA,
yeah.
Victor Reyes, another guy. He's been around for 6-7 years. He was drafted by Atlanta. Finally, drafted by the Braves in 2012. Played 7 seasons in the minors, and now he can hit.
He's a rule. He was a Rule 5 selection by Avila and the Tigers. Yeah. So it's working out. It's worked. But, you know, we don't know. I mean, this has been a nice spurt that they've been on. We don't know what's going to happen in another year or so on and so forth. You keep thinking, well, maybe Kristen Stewart's going to come alive a little bit. But you know, I don't know that he is. So we've got to wait and see.
It's
been nice the last week or so to see them at least be competitive with everybody.
Yes.
I think that, you know, that helps a lot. It helps everybody's attitude with the ball club, too.
I want to talk a little bit about the beanball war between the Yankees and the Rays. And also, we're going to talk about, whether you like it or not, for at least a few minutes, a subject that has been off the show for a long time, and that is the NBA. Because I, in this role, am forced to watch the sports that nobody else wants to watch. So I'm going to talk about the NBA and tell people who don't care enough about the NBA to watch it what they're not watching. Okay.
And don't forget, we also, this is going to be the high point of this show, the pick of Dennis Dale McLean to win the Kentucky Derby coming up. Stay tuned, folks.
Isn't he on a roll? Didn't he pick the last horse?
That horse was a shoe-in.
He was a 1-5 favorite. Anyway, Dr. Yaldo is doing it again, given surgeries, just these life-changing surgeries, now that he's back open, even in the midst of the COVID crisis that is still here, but with all the safety precautions, patients are lining up to get these life-changing surgeries, like custom LASIK for people under 45. Get that 20/20 vision. Throw away your glasses and contact lenses forever. What a pain they are. Also, multifocal lens exchange. I got that. People 45 plus are getting that, so they'll never get cataracts, and they don't have to worry about reading glasses anymore. They can see up close and far away in high def. This is not hype. These surgeries are the safest with the fewest side effects in all of medicine. Get the free evaluation from Dr. Yaldo. Find out which procedure will change your life in ways you can only imagine. Mention my name, mention No Filter, and you will get fabulous discounts up to $1,500. Call 1-800-398-EYES. Go to YaldoEyeCenter.com. Tell them No Filter Sports sent you. And everyone in Michigan knows about Lincoln's legacy of luxury cars. I get mine at Hoop McInerney's Star Lincoln because Star Lincoln is just a wonderful dealership, family-owned since Hoop McInerney opened it back in the 60s. He was the legendary auto giant and philanthropist in July. Star got nearly 105-star reviews. People very happy with the cars, obviously so, and the service. This is a wonderful dealership, and I recommend it fully. I've gotten 6 cars from Star, Detroit's premier Lincoln dealership. Make an appointment. Get the service you demand or deserve at 248-354-4900, or you can buy effortlessly online at starlincoln.com. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Well, I guess, you know, these, it's so funny. No, I shouldn't say funny, but the other night, our oldest Chapman, of course, I don't pronounce it in the with a Spanish accent the way Bob can, but
his name actually is, you mean? You won't tell what his name is. Aroldis Chapman. Is that that hard? Yeah. That's not that hard.
Aroldis Chapman, like I said, appealing his 3-game suspension for throwing
you're under a Michigan graduate
under the chin of a young guy named Brissau of Tampa. Benches emptied after Chapman then struck him out to end the game. But again, last night there was supposed to be more retribution. This is kind of a growing rivalry between Tampa and the Yankees, but Tampa's now won 8 of the last 10, and they lead the Yankees by 4.5 games. But typical, you know, not allowed in the pandemic to do any type of close non-social distancing. So it's a typical baseball fight, as Denny's described hilariously many times, and a lot of looking and jawing at a distance and being fakely held back. But it petered out last night.
Just grab the guy and roll on the ground. That's all you're supposed to do. You're not supposed to throw a punch, because if you throw a punch, you'll break your hand, and then you're on the DL, and then they'll release you.
Yeah, two things I didn't like about this.
One thing. Let me say one thing. All of a sudden, we're seeing a lot of benches clear. I think it's got a lot to do with the pandemic. I think mental health is being challenged at times. I mean, especially in the NBA, when Eli's going to go there in a little while. Man, I'm going to tell you, they've got some problems that a lot of us have never faced in our life.
That's a good point. I think many people are on edge right now, not just in sports.
Bob, I'll tell you something else. In this city right now, you go on 696 out here, and I do 75, 76 all day long. I am being passed by 9 out of 10 cars. Everybody's doing 90 miles an hour.
Yeah. Two things about the Chapman situation, Denny, which I think you will corroborate for me. Number one, he threw slightly behind this batter's head. Yeah. And he's throwing 101. The natural inclination when the ball's coming toward your head for a hitter is to lean backwards. God, get out of the way. That means the ball's going to hit you right in the head. And secondly, if a guy like Chapman or anybody actually had to bat as you did when you played in the major leagues, you know, you're coming up next, man, and you better be concerned, because you're going down.
That's the difference, because when we played, they went after the pitchers. The pitchers were the ones that were going to take the 128 seams in the ass. And, of course, we'd get on base, too, but that was no good because we couldn't run anyway. But, you're right. You're absolutely right. I mean, this is an idea. Throwing behind a head is the most dangerous thing in the world. It can destroy a guy. It can kill a guy. Do I have to mention Tony Conigliaro?
Things
happen. You know,
that's why Kevin Cash, the Rays manager, said he assuming that it was a purpose pitch. It's poor judgment, poor coaching. On the comment, of course, pointing the finger at Aaron Boone. Boone comes back and says that's inflammatory, reckless. You know, it seemed like it was going to escalate, and may come back again, but they just didn't do anything.
Well, you don't throw at the head. You throw right around the waist or below. You know, if you really want to get a guy's attention, you throw at his legs, like Lolich used to do at Carew, and then Carew would steal 3 bases in the next inning. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Okay, well, you mentioned Mickey Lolich. He was that rare combination of a guy who was left-handed, but he hit right-handed, which meant his left arm, his pitching arm, was exposed to the pitcher. And they, in your day, Denny, they actually tried to take hitters and change them around so their pitching arm wasn't exposed to 100-mile-an-hour fastball or whatever it is. And, you know, you could have ended a pitcher's career that way.
Well, I wasn't aware of that, but thank you for the information. I will consult.
You missed a lot, didn't you, when you played?
Well, I tell you, I don't know where I was.
Now they got all kinds of padding and elbow pads and stuff like that that they can protect.
In fact, and the guys that get hit a lot, the guys that crowd the plate are putting more and more padding on all the time. I mean, and they have to. I mean, these kids today, you know, we didn't have a gun back then. But I don't know if they throw any harder than we did. But the bottom line is a lot more people getting hit than I've ever seen. Look what Mize did the other night. He hit 3 guys.
And I'm telling you, that's exactly the same, because one of the guys he hit, Nelson Cruz, hit right on the elbow when he had an elbow pad. So in a different day and age, he'd have had a broken elbow. And probably. Of course, Jacoby Cohen's.
Well, a different day and age, Eli. If Nelson Cruz had played in Denny McClain's era and was utterly destroying the Detroit Tigers, as he'd done for years with different teams, his ass would have been on the ground every time he came up to bat. This guy just kills the Tigers.
Yeah, he really does. You know, he kills everybody. This guy's a good hitter. You know, God, he's 41 years old and he's still hitting long home runs. Oh, I mean, it's really impressive.
So I watched the NBA. I'll get into that in a moment. I also watched a little U.S. Open, and this is what got me about the no fans thing. And they've talked about what are the playoffs going to be like? You know, where the walk off home run and there's nobody there. The number one seed, Carolina Pliskova, was ousted, and there was nobody in the crowd. And it was so bizarre to see a number one seed upset. You know what it's like at the U.S. Open, the Connors and Crickstein match and the fans. Yeah. So this is what is the big hole. And I don't blame any of these sports for trying, but it's so much about presentation. It's so much about, you know, the intricacies of the game with the fans and the cheerleaders and the dancing girls and the pyrotechnics and the crowd shots of the adult giving the little kid the ball when it goes in the stands, you know, and the human element is just completely gone. And I was thinking the other night about the old days when you played, Denny, and Jim Campbell always felt that we don't need any of that stuff.
Right.
I'm going to have the organ play Little Doggy in the Window. I don't care what you think. All the years they played Country Boy when Herbie would, you know, do the infield with the and the players would say, oh, God, this is so old-fashioned. Yep. And Campbell says, the game ought to stand on its own. You shouldn't have to do this stuff. And boy, has that changed.
You know what he hated? Let me tell you what he hated. He hated the fact that he had to have bat day, ball day, shirt day, cap day, keychain day.
I should have to give anything away. Right. They should just come to see my team.
He hated it with a passion. As a matter of fact, he would only give each player one bat for the, if you had three kids, I had three at the time. He would only give us one bat.
Unbelievable.
It was a cheap bastard, I'll tell you.
When you were a boy growing up in Chicago, how many times did your dad take you to see the Cubs or the White Sox play? Did you go a lot?
Well, we didn't have any money, so we went one time.
Okay, and, so you know what I'm going to say then.
What?
Same for, it's so special to get to go to a Major League Baseball game when you were a boy.
Oh, no
what
doubt.
A special treat. We didn't need any of that stuff, and I'm with Jim Campbell. I freaked when they put that stupid merry-go-round in Comerica Park.
Well, that's a different
what they're thing. Saying is, kids, we know baseball is boring. You don't have to watch the game. Come get on the merry-go-round instead.
Fans don't think the game is boring. That's number one. Number two, we've moved into new levels of entertainment and circus and all of that stuff, all of those little things for the kids. You know, they can now, a lot of times you wouldn't bring your little kids to the ballpark. Now they bring them and they go out in the outfield and they ride the rides and, eat the cotton candy.
Bob,
and the clowns come around and paint their faces and what have you. It's, it's all entertainment now.
And in fairness, minor league baseball really got that going. When we were in Reading, when Denny wrote the book, when I wrote Denny's book, we were in Reading, and it was such a family thing. So people felt great. They could bring their kids to the game, let them go in center field in the bleachers. They could swim. They could play stuff. And the parents could watch the game.
The three of us were boys. You went to that game. You watched every pitch. Your gaze was transfixed on what was going on.
Bob's, calm down. But now you can take a two-year-old to the game and not have to hire a babysitter and put them in the damn merry-go-round. So there's reasons for it, but it just became obvious to me last night when the number one seed gets upset and there's none of that color from the fans and that is actually color, the things they wear, the way they dress up, the way they wear the jerseys and paint their faces. So it's just a very stark presentation.
And that's
right,
as opposed to Wimbledon, with their stiff jaws. The U.S. Open is so fun. People are drinking, they're having fun, man. They're calling out to the players. You really miss the fans at the U.S. Open.
Well, not just that. How about all the shots of the box where the family is and the coach, and they're chewing their fingernails, and the moms and dads are looking on.
By the way, I don't know which sister got beat, but either Sabrina or Serena got beat yesterday.
Sabrina?
It's Venus.
I think Venus lost.
You think it's ever too done? They were Sabrina and Serena. That caused some problems at dinner time. So I'm also watching. I'm also watching the NBA last night and watching the end of the Miami-Milwaukee game. I don't know if any of you guys saw this. Probably not.
I haven't seen a game yet.
Two ridiculous foul calls. You know, Hubie Brown used to say there's five fouls on every play. You just have to pick which one you call with the contact that goes on and the bumping and the pushing and the shoving. Goran Dragic, Chris Middleton is behind the three-point line trying to tie this game up. Dragic, like hands up, don't shoot. Just standing there like a statue with his hands in the air, and Middleton comes down on him, and they call the foul on Dragic, giving Middleton three free throws to tie the game and potentially send it to overtime. And then Jimmy Butler is going to win the game on a free throw when it's tied. He shoots from the corner. The ball is in the air. It's halfway there. He comes down, and Giannis, who was defending him, gently touches his left hand on his back as he gets down. But the ball was gone for a second and a half. That's a foul, too. So here you have a sport where you beat the crap out of each other, but in the final moments, you get near a guy, and it's a foul, and it changes the course of the game.
You're right about
that. I just thought that was bad refereeing.
You're right, and the same thing's going on in the NHL playoffs. I have seen some of that. Where calls by the referees or no calls by the referees can influence and decide games. I also want to mention, Eli, since you brought up the NBA, Monday night I watched as the Bruins eliminated Tampa Bay. Lightning scored in double overtime to win it. This was a great game. End-to-end spectacular plays by both goalies. But you know what? I'm saying it wasn't the same. It's just without the fans, it's just not the same. Yeah. So I want to say that Zeno Chara was given a fantastic send-off on NBC afterwards with the comments of the great Doc Emmerich of Marysville, Michigan, and color commentators Keith Jones and Brian Boucher. Chara is 43 now, 6'9" defenseman, as you know, a free agent who reportedly wants to play again, just as the Bruins reportedly do not want to re-sign him. He's their captain. So Doc Emmerich says, and I quote, if you had Zeno Chara over to your house for dinner, he'd do nothing but ask you all about you, your family, and your life, and would never say anything about his own life. He's a great guy, and I hope if he wants to play, that Chara comes back somewhere.
And let's not forget that this guy, he's been a plus player since 2007. So, I mean, even though he's 43 years old, you know, he's still getting a plus 26 on the season. That means he's doing his job as a defenseman while he's out there. He's
why wouldn't the Bruins want him back? I don't get that. You don't know
he's
either.
He's going to be 44.
money, maybe. I don't know.
He's only 20 years away from Social Security.
He sounds perfect for the Wings. They always get these once great players who are totally washed up in their late 30s, early 40s, and can't play anymore. I couldn't believe when they got Daniel Alfredson a few years ago. Daniel Alfredson? And he was pretty much done, you know.
People, we've talked a bit about the fact that the ratings are down in the NBA 45% since the 2012 season. But in fairness, that shouldn't surprise anybody. You know, a lot of the games are on during the daytime. You got playoff games in August, makes no sense. More people watch online than they did back then. You know, you got the political, although I think the political stuff is maybe a small part of it, but not a large part of it.
But Eli, it is what it is, right? It is what it is. I mean, that's the way they have to play these playoffs if they're going to get through them.
I get it. Did you see what speaking of the Pistons, who haven't played a game on television in a long time because when they do, nobody watches, and because they didn't get a chance to go out of the bubble because they're one of the teams that are eliminated. This is interesting. So I'm saying, Flagstar Bank is offering a 5% on your money if you put your money down to buy season tickets next year. So, of course, you can't get more than 0.5% or 1% if you're going to buy a CD or a money market. But here's the problem. The money, after you get your 5% back on the – and by the way, it would cost about $8,000 to get a couple of season tickets at $75 a ticket. The problem is you're going to get 5% of the $8,000 until the season starts whenever it does. But then you got to spend the money. That's on right. tickets, which is the problem. But they're trying anything.
That's a good thing, because, as you know, it's made you even more millions. Stock market's going insane. You take the money and just put it in the market and watch it roll now.
Well, you don't know that, because it's
today. You never know.
Today. Yeah. We'll ask Luke Nowacki about that. We'll talk about him a little bit.
Is that my segue now?
That's your segue. Go ahead. Knock it out.
We'll do. Well, folks, you know that we've been telling you about Luke Nowacki of Pinnacle Wealth Strategies for a long time. We want you to remember his credentials, his great expertise honed over decades as a financial advisor. And that's allowed Luke to build a track record of success. He's helped families chart a path and then steadily, systematically guide them to financial independence. So you want to let Luke develop a new path for you, or maybe even just refine the one you're on. Set up a complimentary consultation with him. Luke's going to answer all your questions, then lay out a comprehensive plan for you to consider to fulfill your financial goals, or maybe even your business needs. We feel confident promoting Luke Nowacki because we've heard from his clients that he is highly ethical, caring, knowledgeable, and is going to always be there to adjust and suggest when market forces alter the landscape. Here's the number to call: Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Strategies, 248-663-4748. Advisory services offered through Royal Alliance Associates. Other names or products mentioned here are independent of Royal Alliance Associates. And with interest rates, perfect segue into this stuff, what we've been talking about, with interest rates at record lows, you need to consider taking advantage of these conditions to refinance your home with David Hall Mortgage. He's been a prominent voice in the Detroit area for over 30 decades. He built his business.
Three decades.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Decades.
I said 30. Okay, we'll do an edit on that one. I once breathlessly said on the air in Lansing when George McGinnis of the Pacers signed a new contract, George McGinnis has signed a new multi-million year contract with the Indiana okay. Pacers instead of dollar.
Talk about David. Go ahead.
Anyway, so David's built his business and his reputation of leadership in the mortgage market by consistently offering the choices, options, and personal attention that separates him from the mortgage factories you see and hear about in the media. It's why he has so many thousands of satisfied clients. Hall Financial prides itself in keeping the process moving with a staff that consistently provides the fastest service in the business as well, generally 3 weeks or fewer. That's how you garner nearly 1,500 five-star reviews, as David Hall has done, from Michigan homeowners just like you. So you go to David Hall Mortgage, get started, davidhallmortgage.com, or you just call him. Here's an easy number, 248-308-5000. Hall Financial, lower payments, better options, more personal attention, and you're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
There's only one guy that I know that took money for decades, and that's Bobby Bonilla.
So, you know what?
And he's still getting paid.
You know what our buddy Larry Sorensen once told me? When he was with the Brewers and they brought Sal Bando in at the end of his career from Oakland A's, he's just totally washed up. Behind his back, of course, the Brewers called him Jesse James for stealing all the money.
he was a good guy, really a good guy. He was more or less the leader of the club when I was there.
We have talked about how the world is in constant change, and I've taken it from the marijuana perspective and say in my lifetime it's gone from reefer madness, if you try it, it's going to turn you into a sex fiend, to a medical miracle.
Well, I never smoked that much dope, and I became one anyway.
That's right. don't call it dope. Anyway, gambling is the other one. It's gone from the devil's work to the coolest new thing. And to think, and Denny, although it's been disproven, you were under the impression Michael Jordan was banned from the NBA for gambling, even though he never gambled on games. He gambled on golf, and you don't know that. Okay. In any case, because look what is happening now. He was hired by DraftKings or he's an owner of the Hornets. He's taken an equity stake in DraftKings, which is a betting company, and they're praising Jordan for what he's going to bring to it, which is nothing but his name. He's going to bring strategic counsel and business acumen and all that BS. He's the name that gives, he's the face that gives it something, because the guys that run the business are going to still run the business. But it's just crazy how
the Disney
company has bought stakes in gambling enterprises.
Right. All of the baseball teams are in now, almost every one of them. Listen, The Cubs yesterday announced that they are going to have the first retail sports book in their baseball park. Yeah, Mr. Wrigley has got to be turning over in his grave because he was just like Jim Campbell. We don't need bats to be given away and balls to be given away. Yeah. But they are opening up their sports book for next year where you can go in, have dinner, bet on anything you want to bet. And it's not only baseball, but you can bet on all of the sports in their sports book with the same company that Jordan has joined.
Yeah. Okay, now, boys, I know you remember when the legendary Willie Mays was, I think, banned from baseball because he took a job as a greeter at a Las Vegas casino.
Right. That's right. Right.
So to me, if you're a strong commissioner and Adam Silver, you know, the jury's still out on this guy. We don't know 100% about him yet. You go to Michael Jordan and say, are you out of your mind? You're an owner of an NBA team.
It's legal.
And you're not going to do this. I will not let you do this.
It's legal. It's just totally legal. They're going to be
the legality. I'm just questioning whether Silver's going to step forward.
Hey, listen. And don't you think that there aren't guys that bet either with whatever. I mean, if you're a gambler, you're going to gamble on anything that moves during the day.
Now, unfortunately, when you go to Wrigley Field and bet, you'll be able to drink while you're gambling, but you won't be able to smoke weed quite yet while you're gambling. But that's the next step.
I know you checked that out, didn't you? The first thing you checked out.
Too funny. So I want to. We got Matt Shepard coming up in a few minutes.
Yeah, we do. I got some other things I want to bring up here.
How about the Big Ten? Can we talk about the fact that the Big Ten is now, according to a report from Dan Patrick, that Kevin Warren, who said irretrievably there will be no football this fall in the Big Ten, and now the reports are and there's support for it. Donald Trump talked to Kevin Warren the other day, said it's down to the 1 yard line. You know how badly he wants football to be
Renier Saban, in the wake of the criticism of Trump getting involved in this, wrote I think in the Detroit Free Press on Thursday morning. Yeah, Trump says he's down to the 1 yard line. He doesn't say which 1 yard line.
I think he's got 99 yards to go.
Well, no, I don't think so. And now you had the president of Ohio State, Christina Johnson, said 2 days ago, today's Thursday on Tuesday, that she did vote against the conference decision to postpone. There's been a lot of talk. Was there really a vote or not? And they all want their athletes to get a shot at it. And I'm telling you, you guys laughed at me the other day, or at least Bob did. They're going to do what the NBA and the NHL do. They're going to create a bubble on college campuses because their players are already in a bubble anyway. They got the team facilities. They hang out at Schembechler Hall in Michigan. They eat together. They travel together. They study together. And so that's what it's going to be.
But Eli, my point was
even if they send the students,
you know what that costs?
But the bill. Why is the NBA paying $1.5 million a day for the bubble?
They got it.
No, because they get the TV revenue and they lose less money.
Right. Earth to Eli. The NBA has one bubble in Orlando. The NHL has two, one in Edmonton, one in Toronto. Right. You can't have individual bubbles. In other words, the big 14 teams are going to have to go to Indy or Chicago or someplace, and everybody lives in one bubble there if you want to stop this.
They will keep the team together. They can study together. They're going to do – listen, I'm not going to say they're going to call it a bubble, but their justification for starting football again while the students are restricted and can't even go to class and can't hang out and can't party, they're going to create medical safety measures, quote unquote, so that the players can play reasonably safely. They've been doing it already, and they're going to continue to do it. And that's why you may see, according to some Big Ten people, saying it could start as early as October and maybe by Thanksgiving.
There is some considerable conversation right now that there's going to be a vaccination available by the end of October, sometime in November, at the latest December. And if that's the case, then I can see them playing Thanksgiving. But if that's not the case, I still don't think they're going to play till spring. I really don't. As bad as they want to play, as bad as they want to demonstrate for the NFL, they're just not going to be able to play. It's just too dangerous.
I don't know if you saw the story, but it came out Thursday morning that now medical authorities have said that they've been trying to treat COVID-19 with a steroid mix, and it saved a lot of lives. And they think that this is possibly another thing they're going to do. I mean, I've got to believe that we're getting fairly close.
I do. I agree. Yeah, that. I think things are bubbling up. In fact, you know, we're going to go to Mexico in January and stay there for a while. And Abbott Labs has come up with, they say, a 5-minute test that you go to the airport and they'll know in 5 minutes if you have it or not, which is going to change. And you know how airline travel, I think, is down over 70%. It's going to change that. So yeah, whether it's preventive things, whether it's things to temper it, or whether eventually a vaccine to prevent it, we'll see. But obviously, there's furious work going on to make this happen.
Talk about an oxymoron. The governor of Mississippi yesterday said there will be no large gatherings at the football games. There will be no pep rallies, no social time. Nobody can pull the pickup truck and start eating chicken in the back of the truck. And the three schools that are affected by this, Mississippi, Mississippi State, and Southern Mississippi, they are, though, allowed, and think about this oxymoron conflict, they are allowed, though, to have 25% of the stadiums filled up.
The governor's name is Tate Reeves. And he said, dadgummit, we can't have, and he did say that, I'm not making fun of it. He said, dadgummit, we can't have tailgates because we're too good at it, which means people put a tent in like a little 20 by 20 area and 50 people cram in there.
Right.
But listen, you can do social distancing in a ballpark, although a lot of schools are not going to have any people in the stands, and the Lions won't have anybody in the stands the first couple of games, but some teams will. 22% of the stands can be used for fans and still do the 6-foot social distance. And then you got to wear a mask when you go get your food. What?
Sitting in the stands isn't the problem. Going to the concessions is where the problems are going to be.
But they're going to
sell concessions.
It's just like going into a 7-Eleven or some grocery store right now. God, people are all on top of each other. Half of the people aren't.
You got to wear a mask. We got to wear a mask.
Going to do it. No, they're not going to do it.
I think there'll be people there to make sure that we're talking
about Mississippi. Come on.
We generally don't discuss sovereign foreign nations on this program outside the United States. So you and Eli and Brandon, thank you guys, have been to great tailgate picnics in Ann Arbor or East Lansing.
Sure.
I've been to one in the Grove in Oxford, Mississippi. It's the best in America. Oh, yeah. It's such a great event. And now I guess they're not going to do that. Now, I did want to mention a couple things about Mr. Trump. Not that he would be diabolical or be scheming with respect to interfering in the Big Ten and its football program. But let's look at the coming election here, boys.
That's what Michigan, it's all about.
Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania.
Ooh.
Those are key swing states we're talking about here. Trump wants to appease people, and it's a smart move on his part.
Yeah, Big Ten,
to appease people in there, so he's championing this thing coming back. And you're not going to believe what happened to me on Tuesday. It's the strangest thing. I agreed with Mr. Trump on something. Trump warned pro football and baseball players not to follow the lead of the NBA in boycotting games and kneeling for the national anthem. Okay. He's urging them to, and this is a quote, stand tall for our country and our flag. So people are tired of watching the highly political NBA basketball ratings. The basketball ratings are way down and they won't be coming back, said Mr. Trump. He also wrote in his Twitter account, I hope football and baseball are watching and learning because the same thing's going to happen to them.
I haven't said this before, but I believe the biggest problem that they have are the things that they are doing right now with the television ratings are dramatically horrible. And I believe the biggest problem is that the guys are not standing for the national anthem. Listen, whether they want to or not, I don't care. I mean, they can do whatever, stand on their head. That's okay if that's the way they want to respect the flag. But you know what? I think that's the biggest problem. People have turned them off because they're doing all of these other things. And, Black Lives Matter. You know, we know Black Lives Matter.
I understand
all of that. But the bottom line is, if you guys want to stay in the NBA and make lots of money, something's got to change over there.
Well, and the NFL is planning on, at least the first week, extensive content based on racial injustice. You're going to have players reading personalized poems. You're going to have first-person vignettes based on their experiences with racial justice. So that ain't going to happen. But, and Bob, I agree with you. It's smart for Trump to do that appeal to the swing states. My question is, at this point, and this is just my thought here, is anybody really going to change their mind? I saw Trey Gowdy, the former Republican, say the other day, he was on the Bill Maher show. He said, one of the reasons I got out of politics is nobody changes their mind. And that's why it's so interesting. I just wonder.
Not entirely true in this case, Eli. Well, and I'll tell you.
And by the way, it only takes 1 or 2% to change their mind.
Here's the 97%. Thing. Did you see the headline story? I think it was the Detroit Free Press on Thursday morning. Rick Snyder, the Republican former governor of Michigan, in a blazing headline, why I am voting for Joe Biden. That might change some minds. You see these big shot Republicans who say they're not going to support Trump.
Voting for Biden. That's for sure.
Who said that? It's Rick Snyder said he's voting for Biden.
Yes. And he explained in the Free Press why he's voting for Biden. So I think that is going to change some people's minds. And again, we don't need to get political about whom we're supporting or whatever it is. That's just a fact. Yeah. And if the Republican Party bigwigs, some of them at least, are deserting Mr. Trump, I would think at least that means big trouble for him.
Coming up in the next few minutes, we're going to have This Day in Sports. We'll have the mailbag. And of course, Matt Shepard's going to join us to talk about the Tigers. I want to tell you now, though, Feldman Automotive, Michigan's number one Chevy dealer, 5 locations, Novi, New Hudson, Lansing, Livonia, Highland, 9 locations overall for Feldman, Feldman Hyundai in New Hudson, Kia of Novi, Dodge, Jeep, and Ram of Woodhaven, and Michigan's top-rated pre-owned supercenter in Waterford, known simply as 1-800-PRE-OWNED. Buy a fully inspected and guaranteed pre-owned auto from Feldman. You can relax. You get the exclusive drive it for 3 days, love it, or bring it back guarantee. And the unmatchable kicker, their exclusive guaranteed credit approval. We're proud and confident you can find what you need at one of Feldman's 9 locations. Let them earn your business. At the same time, support No Filter Sports. You can also buy online at FeldmanAuto.com, hassle-free at home or in the showroom. By the way, I got to say goodbye to the radio listeners in Toledo and WCWA. Thank you for listening to the No Filter Sports podcast. We also encourage you to consider Power Home Solar, America's fastest growing solar energy company. All the panels, of course, made right here in America. You help save the environment and help yourself avoid those costly and infuriating power outages because they've partnered with Generac, the largest provider of in-home backup battery and generator systems. So you get the Power Home Solar's panels and you get Generac, and you're safe with a sustainable solution for your in-home energy. Yes, lower your energy bills and eliminate power outages. That's eliminate forever. Support our guys so they will continue to support us. And you can start right now if you call Power Home Solar, a financing starting at $99 a month. We'll get to This Day in Sports in the mailbag in a moment, but Bob, I see you're champing at the bit. What else do you have for us?
I want your opinions. Kirk Cousins says he is not worried about COVID-19. If I die, I die, quote.
And he's received bundles and bundles and bundles of emails and texts and people threatening his life and everything else. And
really, I have, you know what?
Oh, yeah. It was unbelievable. The stuff that I read online yesterday.
This is the haters. This is the haters. He has every right to say what he did.
Yes.
He said, if his concern 1 to 10 on COVID, he said it's a 0.0000.1. I want to respect what other people's concerns are. For me, I would say I'm going to go with my daily life. If I get it, I'm going to ride it out. I'm going to let nature do its course. Survival of the fittest kind of approach. If it knocks me out, it knocks me out. I'm going to be okay. You know, even if I die, I die, I die. I kind of have a peace of mind about that. I think, Bob, that's not too dissimilar, although that, I don't know about the dying part, because Kirk is a very serious born-again Christian, and he's 100% certain he's going to heaven, believe that. Let's not get into it, though. But his point of view is not that unusual from what's going on in this country right now, so I don't fault him for that at all.
Okay, next story here. We all know that Tom Brady is now playing in Tampa. Then they go out and they sign Gronk and bring him back. And now Leonard Fournette.
Yeah. He's
going to sign with Tampa. How good is Tampa going to be this year, boys?
Well, it's all up to Brady, isn't it? If Brady's able to play and do some of the things he's done in the past, but I just think last year he slowed down a bit, and this year it could be worse. But he says he's having a great time with the coach, and the coach, by the way, is a real
Bruce Arians,
vociferous, loud mouths, eating everybody's ass out from time to time. So, and Gronk says, you know what? It's good because it inspires you. When I had my ass eaten out, I was never inspired.
Well, I don't think it's about getting your ass eat out. I think it's the fact that he's.
Yeah, I don't think I want to touch that.
Stop
phrase.
Saying that.
Yeah. Well, at least he didn't say pimple on his ass, which
really
he says also.
Go there, Danny.
No, we don't want to go there. But
okay, another quick story here.
Well, I'm not done. I'm not done. He asked me my opinion. Right. He's playing with different players except for Gronk. He's got a different coach, different teammates, different line. And as Denny said, he's getting older. I think it'd be very, very difficult for him to succeed in any major way. The only guy that I can think of that really did well was Montana, went to Kansas City, had a couple of good years. But I'm not going to ever put anything past Tom Brady, but I don't expect any miracles this year.
Yeah. Another item, the NFL's announced on Wednesday they're going to sell cutouts of fans for their home games this year. They're going to be placed in the lower bowl of Ford Field. You can have one, Brandon, being the wacko you are, for only
$1,000.
Oh, that's
it's $1,000?
But it goes to charity.
Let's all pitch in so Brandon can get his face on TV.
Damn, I thought they were going to be like $100, and I was going to definitely buy one. I had no idea it was a grand.
Nothing for $100 down at this stadium.
Hot dog and a Coke is $100. Yeah.
Well, as far as they're concerned, Brandon, I started $100 too. If they pay me $100, I might go watch the FLs.
Oh, stop it. That's okay, what's next? Works. Anything else?
This week in sports.
Week in sports, Vince Lombardi died on this day 50 years ago, 1970. The great Vince Lombardi, who has constantly come to the Lombardi Trophy, and every great motivational speaker always points what Vince Lombardi would say. So that was then. Go back, 1928, Ty Cobb got his last hit. He was playing for I forgot that he left the Tigers at the end. He was a pinch hitter for the A's. He played his whole career with the Tigers, but apparently not. In 1985, Gary Carter hit two homers versus San Diego. 5-2 games ties the record. I remember reading as a kid, I was so excited. Stan Musial hit 5 homers in 2 games. And I remember just thinking what an amazing feat that must be.
When bad things happen to good people, Gary Carter is one of the nicest men I ever met in baseball.
I agree with you. And so many people called him a phony.
At 53. Yeah,
they called him a phony because he was always nice. They called him, his nickname was the kid. And I'll tell you, when I was
Gary
new,
Carter.
Gary cool. Carter.
Oh, Carter,
Gary
pretty
Carter.
Good guy. Yeah.
When nice I was man. New in New York, I remember there was one day where I needed an interview with him. It was at the very end. I got in the clubhouse. Almost everybody was gone. He was packing up, ready to go. And he kind of gave a look like I'm ready to go, but he said, sure. And he did the interview with me, and I was very, very impressed.
Yeah.
Genuinely nice guy. So nice. People thought he was a phony. He was not, if you ask me. 1991. I wasn't aware of this. Major League Baseball dropped the asterisk next to Roger Maris's 61 home runs, and also that day changed the rule to saying a no-hitter had to go 9 innings. Remember your old buddy Dean Chance threw a 5-inning no-hitter, and they said no more of that. And let's see, anything else? 2015, Jim Harbaugh made his debut on this day versus the Utah Utes. That's all I got in this day in sports. How about the mailbag, Bobby?
Well, I got the mailbag here, and I want to remind you folks that you can tweet us at Eli Zara, at MU2Denny, or at Bob Page Sports. Of course, as you regular listeners know, we had Lorenzo White on the show on Monday. D. Champ Green tweeted, not because of my Spartan ties, but it just seems like this was one of those too short interviews. It's always a compliment. Yeah. You enjoy listening to
Lorenzo?
Something. Sorry that it's ending. Yeah. Mm-hmm. James Harris, great show on Monday, but the conversation about no fans in the stands is not a big deal for me. Golf is better. No morons yelling, get in the hole on every shot. Baseball is fine. Auto racing so loud you don't hear the fans anyway. I am really enjoying the sports on TV. Some people are. Frank Brusco, regular listener, writes, Bob, you and Eli are doing a very good job on your questions to your guests. I know we have to adjust for Denny's age, but if I have to hear him ask the same questions every week again, it's going to be different.
That's not fair.
Go ahead. I don't know. I'm just reading what they write.
Well, then read a negative one about yourself, then, if you're going to read a negative one.
When I get them, you know me better than that. I always read negative ones about myself.
We don't know you better
it.
Than that.
Oh, yeah. At this point, I think you do. So here's one we could have brought up with, could bring up with Matt Shepard, but we're going to get into it anyway. Sean O'Hara says about our conversation, homers in color commentating and play-by-play. He says, there's nothing wrong with that. These guys broadcast for the Detroit Tigers organization, so they should be homers. I don't know. I mean, I understand that fans want to hear the announcers pulling for their team, but most fans are sophisticated. They know what's going on. They know baseball. They understand it. And I draw the line where these guys are from the BS. Well,
let's see what Shep has to say about that. Let's see
every once in a while. Every broadcaster goes over the line. That's all. And these guys are no different. I mean, you know, guy gives up 4 or 5 runs. Boy, he had a good slider today, you know, because he threw 2 for strikes, for God's sakes. And yeah. I mean, it's like Mize the first time out there. Mize didn't look good the first time out there, pitched through about 4 1/3 innings. It missed with just about everything. And, you know, everybody talking about what a great job he did. Well, what's happened since? He needs to be in the minor leagues for at least a year, maybe 2.
Yeah, Craig Thornton brings up something very interesting. I always blow the minds of young people when I tell them that I used to go to Cobo Arena and watch NBA doubleheaders. Yes, folks.
Yeah.
And so Craig says he came across this while browsing some old newspapers from 1963. Mm-hmm. And the Pistons were playing the Syracuse Nats in one game. And then the second game, I don't know what it was, the Celtics versus the Sixers. He wants to know, was this a normal thing at Cobo? A doubleheader with some out-of-town teams? Yeah, because the NBA was struggling.
Yeah.
They were starving, and they needed something else bigger to bring fans in.
How about the movies? They always had double features. Not anymore.
Sure.
Yeah.
So Scott Plakta comes in with, boys, it's been a while. Can't believe I'm writing this, but Danny is right. Mize is not who we think he is. He needs the basis pitching on the fastball. That ain't happening. Scooble threw 97 the other day. Then he says, and Bob was right. The TV ratings for sports are down everywhere. I admit, I doubted that they would be down. I mean, what else are people going to do? I think that's what Brandon was saying at the time. He says, I can't believe Bob didn't toot his own horn a little bit on the last episode. I mean, come on, I never toot my own horn. Right?
Come on.
Are you
I'm too modest
kidding.
To do that.
Basketball in August?
You are the original tutor.
Yeah. Yeah, tell us where you worked, Bob, and everybody you met over the years. Go ahead.
Well, so the show has list. To end pretty soon, at least.
Go ahead. Back so to the bag. All
right. Norm Madison says, please let Danny McLean know that Notre Dame did not send all of its students home. They switched to online-only classes and are beginning in-person classes this very week. The students, of course, who did test positive for COVID had to go into quarantine. I want to read this from Dave Harding. He says, I worked with Jason Klein for a little over a year. He'd be a good interview for you guys, having Who's gone that? To the Final Four. I'm going to explain that because I didn't know myself, Eli. So Jason Klein is a kid from Gros Eel, hell of a basketball player. Not only did he go to the Final Four, he was MSU's top scorer behind Mateen Cleaves in 97-98, averaged over 11 points a game. I was in New York, of course, but I just don't remember him.
No.
Interesting. Hmm. Yeah. All right, so then we got Lenny stepping up, and he says, Denny needs to take a step back. Quote, Bob, listen up, has gotten so old it's painful to listen to. I just heard Denny say Miggy sucks, the Hall of Fame hitter who's brought us so much excitement over the years. Hitting pretty good right now, isn't he?
Oh, and really? Now all of a sudden he gets a couple of base hits and this guy's jumping up and down off the trampoline, huh? Listen, the guy is done. He is absolutely finished. He may hit about 225, 230 this year. And if that's good enough for you and you think that's wonderful, sir, hey, go for it.
Well, and while Denny says, listen up, Bob, I usually go, Bob, stop.
Yeah, so exactly. So he mentions that too. He mentions that. He says, and Eli, stop yelling at Bob. Say, stop. Listen, Eli, you stop it. And now another one for Denny. This is again from Lenny. Lenny says, Denny is now saying the Tigers don't play like a team.
Yeah, I don't get that.
That's actually laughable. The Tigers are playing up.
I look at the ball club like there's little parts trying to be fit into the ball club. It doesn't look like a good mesh yet. That's what I'm saying.
You know,
it's like the guys are a little bit unsure each year when they're out in the outfield, when they're playing defensively. It just looks to me that
can't say, I got it. Yeah, it's mine. I got it. They can't. It seems to be baseball players interact.
Every time there's a pop-up behind the infield, you know, all the guys come running, but it doesn't look until the last nanosecond that somebody finally says, I got it.
That's just fundamentals, isn't it? That's just fundamentals.
Well, that's obviously fundamentals, but what I'm saying is they don't know each other well enough because they haven't played with each other long enough.
That's fair.
It took us with the 68 team 3 or 4 years before we knew everybody. I mean, I don't know if we even knew each other's first names for 3 years.
It's because they were such a bunch of drunks.
Just a little bit more. I want to remind you that you can join the show in the mailbag if it's good enough, folks. That's ask. You just send an email to us, asknofilter@gmail.com, or you call us. You can text us at this number as well, besides leaving a message, 760 760- 8-9 balls. And I just want to add that Keith from Oak Park did call to thank us for mentioning him with regard to his friend, Mike Hartman, whom Eli and I, Mike would be a great guest on the show. I've heard him on other shows. He's a terrific interview, has great stories about playing for Scotty Bowman. But since you mentioned Mike Hartman, I want to mention Trenton, Michigan's own Larry DePalma. Remember him? He played with the Minnesota North Stars for quite a while, also a little with San Jose and the Penguins. He was the same kind of player as Hartman, just a middleweight, tough, tough kid who just dropped the gloves, wouldn't back down from anybody. Those guys, I hate to be politically incorrect, but you can't have all Chiefs. You got to have some Indians in sports as well. Danny, I promised the people at the top of the show, we haven't gotten there yet. We're going to do it now. Who going to win this, the Kentucky Derby?
I don't know.
That's an honest answer. I appreciate it.
I have no idea. I haven't even looked at it yet.
We just know he's going to have four legs and run very fast.
But I will tell you Monday.
I'm pretty sure.
When you tune in, what you probably will see are a large number of Black Lives Matter demonstrations going on outside Churchill Downs. That's what they're talking about. Really? The New York Times in Thursday's editions has a very interesting piece on one of the trainers for the Derby, has a Derby horse who happens to be Black. And he's getting a lot of pushback from people, mainly Black people, to, hey, man, you can't take part in this.
Oh,
take
up.
That horse and get out of this.
Shut
you know, up. You can't be part of this.
Shut up. That's what I say.
Well, I think that
I should say shut up, Bob, but this time tell him to shut up. Go ahead.
We all make choices.
I think Tis the Law is the favorite. So I think a lot of people.
Oh, that's right. Tis the Law is the favorite. Yeah.
You picking him? Picking him, Denny?
I don't
the
know.
Horse last
I mean,
time.
There's no money with Tis the Law. Right, you got to no grab somebody else and hope that you know, get a 20 to 1 shot.
Exactly what I do, whether I go to the track and bet or it's too easy to pick the favorite. Pick the next one, like the 9-2, you know, the 7-2 choice or something like that, or the 5-2. Pick the second guy and hoping he wins.
Yeah, I agree. Right.
So I take the 5-2 horse.
Bet him across the whole board, though. You got to take the second and third horse and bet him across.
Can we get to our interview now?
Yeah, we can, but I just want to say one more thing. I'm disappointed that you're taking this stance, Denny, because we love our listeners, and every time there's a big pick coming up on a big event, they always tune in to hear what you're going to say, and they bet against you and make millions. So you don't have any single pick on
the
Derby?
I've been pretty good, pal.
The last race you picked.
Okay, enough. And, you know, enough.
There's no reason that Tis the Law won't win. There's no reason at all because the track's going to be dry. And look out, this horse can run. This horse can run as fast as you can.
I think he's probably a little faster than that.
He's the next secretary. Hey, let's get to our interview today. We're going to talk to Tiger play-by-play guy Matt Shepard. Last night, the Tigers, that would be Wednesday night, were on their way to a seventh victory. They led 4-0. I believe it was a third or fourth inning. Spencer Turnbull, who had pitched well in his last outing, was doing quite well. And then, as you hear from Matt Shepard's call last night, this happened.
Now the 1-1. Hira sends one to deep center. Reyes is going back, and that is crushed. That's a three-run homer for Keston Hira, his ninth of the season. And Milwaukee's pulled within one, just like that.
And, of course, they did come back and win that game. But Matt Shepard joins us now. And I must say, Matt, it's been under trying circumstances, you know, having to try and do play-by-play in a pandemic, just your second year of doing it. But the fact that this ball club is doing pretty well, I suppose, helps somewhat. Because last year, as you know, in your debut season, you suffered through 114 losses and held up well, I thought. So what are your thoughts about where the team is this year?
Well, first of all, it's awesome to be with all you guys, all legends. So I appreciate it very much. It's an honor. Look, I enjoyed
every. Aren't you nice? Aren't you,
please. I try. I think my mom raised me right, Bob. look, last year I had a blast every single day. I know it was tough for Tigers fans to watch a team struggle the way it did. But going to the ballpark every day, having the opportunity to work with the people I work with was fantastic. I do think it helps when a team is competitive. I don't think they always have to win because we all realize that winning is really difficult. Nobody knows that more than Denny. But, you know, just to be in these games, to be more competitive, to beat teams like Cleveland and the Cubs and then sweep the Twins last weekend. Yeah, I mean, it feels good. And the opportunity to see some young guys grow. That's always important. So I think it's been challenging because of the way we're doing it, but overall it's still a blast to do every single day.
At what age did you decide to become the next Ernie Harwell here?
Well, I will not never become the next Ernie Harwell. He's the greatest who ever lived. And he was very influential in my career. 10 years old, Denny. I mean, I used to watch the Tigers every single day or listen to the Tigers every single day. And then we'd go out in the backyard and we'd play and I'd call the games or we'd go up. I lived in Farmington Hills. We'd go up to Dunkel Middle School with junior high at the time, and we'd play there. And I'd call the games, and I would just try to do what Ernie and Paul did so reverently and better than anybody else who's ever listened to baseball. So you just pick up some things here or there, but overall, it's more about his professionalism, I think, that stuck with me, Denny. I mean, he was always there for anybody who wanted to talk to him, and he knew your name. It was really, really important. Yeah. And he was very influential in my career. I reached out to him a long time ago, and he invited me over to his home in Farmington Hills. We had some muffins that his wife made, and we reviewed my tape, and we talked about what it's like to be in this business. And you guys know, Eli's done it longer than I have, and it can be a difficult business, but there's nothing more rewarding. I've always likened this business to being on a team. I loved baseball. I wanted to be a Tiger all my life. I wasn't good enough, right? But there's that camaraderie there. There's that one team goal. That's what television production and broadcasting games is about. We are one team looking for one goal, doing the very best we possibly can. Are we perfect? No. But do we strive for perfection every single night?
You mentioned the business, and interesting that you do, because my philosophy has always been that although you play-by-play guys and we commentators are in the same business in broadcasting, we're really not. So we grew up, of course, announcing games in the playground too, but we were laughing at Van Patrick and Jim Hendricks when he did the Pistons in the mid-60s, kind of making fun of them. I saw Al Ackerman on TV, and I thought, that's what I want to do. I want to give my opinions on TV. So I guess it just depends what kind of person and what kind of personality.
Matt's done both.
Yeah, I have done both. I've tried, the personality. Look, Bob, when you did it, I think it was a little different. Today, it's more about me. And that to me is a bit of a turnoff. I believe what we talk about, sports and the athletes and the managers and the coaches, is really, really hard. And for me to just act like it's not, I think is unfair and wrong. I think for us to sit back on a couch and say, why in the world didn't Matthew Stafford throw the out instead of the out and up? Or to say, how in the world can you not hit that baseball? How in the world can you throw it right down the middle? Is just unfair. It's for people who have never done it before. Yeah. I get that there's some fandom there. I get that there's opinion. There should be opinion. I was upset last night because the Tigers walked 10 guys. Yep. To me, that's ridiculous. However, it's not like they're trying to
didn't like
walk
the home
guys.
Plate umpire too much either, Manny Gonzalez. No, I watched you guys.
I think he squeezed them both. I really do. Yeah. This is not a one-sided situation, but anytime Denny can speak to this better than I can, anytime that you're constantly throwing 2-0 to a batter or going full counts like Detroit did last night, you're asking for trouble.
Well, as I explained to Bob a little while ago, if you can't, a major league pitcher, if you can't understand what strikes and balls an umpire is calling in the first inning or two, you're not going to win. That's just the way it is. All of them have their own little property that they try to protect, inside, outside, up and down, lower strike zones, higher strike zones, and that's it, boy. Like you said, the umpire was the same for both teams. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right, but it's a smaller strike zone today, and I think that's a bit of an issue. It's almost like every single batter is Ricky Henderson. There's a really small strike zone today, and I think it needs to be adapted.
Let me go back to what Bob was talking about a minute ago, because like you, Matt, I've done both. I've done opinionated stuff, and I worked for the Pistons for 6 years, and I was basically a PR man. When they played well, it was easy. I liked it because everybody.
Well, I don't think you were a PR man. That's not true at all. But you were a sideline reporter who gave good information and asked hard questions. That's not right at all.
But I had a hard time when they got bad to pump up the Charlie Villanuevas, to pump up the Austin Days. I had to learn to say, man, if they don't play better defense, they got no shot to say, they're a bit challenged on defense. Unless they straighten things out, it could be a long season. You, however, are better at that than me. And I want to play a couple of calls because, your enthusiasm, especially with no people in the stands, I think my guess is that you need,
and especially when the Tigers hit a home run,
that you feel that you need. So here's a couple of your calls, and we played one earlier. So I want to let's play one of them, and I want to ask you whether this is genuine enthusiasm or this is what you feel you should be doing to please the management and the fans. Go ahead, Brandon, play one of them.
Move him over to second base.
Goes the other way.
Did he get
deep to right? Get going. Gone. How about that? A two-run bomb.
So you can't fake that because you're feeling that. How do you get to that point?
Because I love the Tigers more than anything in sports, and I always have. So, yeah, would it help to have the fans? I think it would help to have the fans from this standpoint. We rely, I believe, anytime you call a home run, you have a big play. Soon thereafter, you should shut up and let the producer and director do their job. And I work with the best in the country. Show faces, show enthusiasm. Hear the microphones might pot it up a little bit and hear that excitement that we have. We don't have that capability because you're not shooting cardboard cutouts. So my home run calls or excitement might go a little bit longer than they would have in the past, Eli, but it's genuine. I don't think anybody can write down a phrase, wait for something to happen in a baseball game, and it could happen at any moment, and then look down and generate the type of enthusiasm. I'm enthused, and some people think it's over the top, and that's okay. But I love it. I'm rooting for these guys every single day because I know them a little bit better. You got a chance to know the Pistons. So here's the debate in sports. And when people say, well, the sideline guy or the play-by-play guy is a PR guy or he's a member. No, I get paid by Fox Sports Detroit. I don't get paid by the Tigers.
But they approve you. They approve you or they don't approve you.
And you know they're listening. And you know they're listening.
Sure they are. I would hope so. I'd hope every Tiger fan is listening. But I'm not calling it for them. I'm calling it for Tigers fans. And quite honestly, I'm calling it for myself. I am fired up when Kristen Stewart hits a home run. I'm really juiced when Kristen Stewart throws a guy out at second base. I think that's great stuff, right? I want that to happen. That's the goal for us, right? I want them to win every single game. So, yeah, I mean, it hurts. But I've always done that. I did that with University of Michigan basketball. I've done that with Detroit Lions football. I've done that with Pistons when I've called them too. You're right. When it's hard to get behind, you know, Austin Day and Charlie Villanueva and Ben Gordon when they're not playing well. I get it. So what do? You can either focus on the other team and what they're doing well or talk about the negative of your team. It's really important to talk about what the other team is doing really well rather than focus on the warts of your team.
Mm-hmm. Shep, I never trust anybody who doesn't like dogs. And so your beautiful dog, is that an Irish setter who just walked into your den?
Oh, did she do that again? She knocks the door open every Zoom call I have. She knocks the door open. No, she's a golden retriever. She's a nice dog, but she's not all there all the time.
Eli's
seen her.
Actually, for this interview, Matt could have walked 10 houses down to my house. We could have socially distanced, which is a question. So it seems to me when I watched you and Gibby last night, do you hear the piped in audio or are you two just watching monitors? Because I think it's so difficult and you guys do a great job of overcoming it that you're not there at the ballpark. You can't travel with the team. That would seem to be so restrictive and so, you know, just taking away the touch you have with the team. So how is it in silence? And you're just watching the game monitor. What do you guys have in front of you when you're sitting there?
We have four monitors. So we have a huge screen television, much like in your den, Eli. We have a production isolation camera to our right. To our left, we have a television that's broken into four categories, both bullpens and all nine and scoreboard. And then to the left, we have a statistical screen. Fox Sports Detroit set us up better than I think anybody in baseball because they've been planning for something like this. Yes, we hear the piped in noise. That's fine. It doesn't bother us. But what I miss most and what I love most about baseball is the opportunity at 3:40. You guys have been there to go into the clubhouse and talk to players. I think it's vital for broadcasters because of two things. First, I'm more about getting stories about them. I want to
so go important, so absolutely. Important that you can say, I'm talking to such and so before the game. It puts no the fan
doubt.
There. I agree.
No doubt. And it's not just baseball either. I want to be able to go to a locker and talk to Austin Romine and just ask him, hey, man, what'd you do over the pandemic? Hey, what did you watch last night? What did you do on your day off? And just filter that into and make them a little bit more real
people. Yeah,
absolutely. So that's number one. And number two, the other thing is I know they have family members watching our broadcast. If they ever have an issue with me, I want to be there so they can tell me face to face. And so we can talk about it. I think it's really important that athletes know the person who's representing their team and their organization. And if there's ever an issue, they can come to me and tell me what they like or what they don't like. And I'm fine with that. So we can talk about it.
You know, I got to tell you something. When I played and we would have a problem every once in a while with one of the broadcasters, because Ernie, I think everybody would admit that Ernie was down the middle of the road. And he was never really overwhelmingly critical of the ball club, but he never really was, up on top and say, hey, whoa.
Very different than George Kell, by the way, who was more like Matt. Yeah, George Kell rooted for the team and Ernie played it straight. You're right.
But now I forgot my – thank you for interrupting.
Oh, boy, sorry about that. Question.
Get it together and come back to us. I got one for Shep then. I got one for Shep. Here's what I wish. I wish you guys, since you were speaking about monitors, I wish you'd watch the monitors more. And by this, I don't mean you and Gibby or Petrie or whatever. Yeah. I mean every play-by-play guy. Just last night's game. I'm listening to you tell me, here's the pitch, ball three outside. No, it wasn't. It was over the inside part of the plate. It was a perfect strike, and the umpire missed the pitch. Yeah. But you guys never seem to say that.
Come on, Bob.
They're not there to criticize the umpires. Otherwise, I think it's a bitch about every pitch if that's the case, right?
Yeah, it's a fair critique. When we're at home, when we're watching the game, because of our location, it's not always easy to see if it's outside or inside, and then suddenly you got to look at the monitor or what happens if you glance at the monitor and the ball's hit. But I get it. When we're in studio calling the game when it's on the road, I don't think I'm missing a pitch that was outside or inside. I may say missed low and away when really it was just
a strike.
Maybe it was a strike. But look, if it's a strike, Bob, he would have called it a strike. So he didn't. So where is it?
That's not true.
But let me ask. I just remember the question.
Good, here we go. Before he forgets it, quick.
Have any of the
uh-oh.
Well, Bob's got, he's got to tell us.
You're going to forget again. Say the question.
Today. Now I'm going to forget it again. Gosh darn it. Stop it. Have any of the players reached out for you if you've said anything in kind of a negative way? Or?
Yeah, last year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, there was a time where Detroit was struggling.
Yes.
And they were playing the Boston Red Sox, and the Red Sox beat them pretty badly the night before. I walked around the clubhouse, and I always broadcast my games with a Detroit Tigers pin on my lapel. And I do so because I was never able to wear the English D, and that's the closest thing I can get to it. A player who is no longer on the squad said to me, why isn't that a Boston B instead of a Detroit D? And I said, I don't know what you mean by that. And he said, all you did was talk about the Red Sox last night. And I said, I forget what the score was. Let's say it's 13-2. I said, hey man, you lost 13-2. I said, I got a chance to do one of two things. I can beat up on why you guys are losing 13-2, or I can compliment the team that's beating my team 13-2. And his comment to me then was, I know you got to do what you got to do because you're told what to talk about, like when the Angels were here and you guys talked about Mike Trout. And I said, well, Mike Trout's the best player in the world.
Yeah.
I said, we only see him once in person in Detroit. I mean, obviously we go to Los Angeles. And I said, we talked about him in the very first game. What else would you talk about other than Mike Trout going into the first game of the 3-game series? He didn't have an answer. I said, how about the next night when we talked about how you guys shut him down and he went 0-for-4? Do you remember us talking about how well you guys did in controlling the best player in the world? And he didn't have an answer. And I said, I didn't think so. I said, what about the fact that today we pumped up an offense that was averaging 2.7 runs per game, or talking about flamethrowers out of the bullpen that have the highest ERA in the American League? I said, we can debate this if you'd like. I said, but my goal is to make things interesting, informative, and entertaining for Tigers audiences. I am not going to do that by beating you and other members of the Tigers up rather than pumping up the opposition. Yep. And so we kind of left it at that, and we had a good enough relationship moving forward.
I would think the toughest thing about your job, Matt, is that I'm watching the center field cameras. I listen to you guys. I know what's going on because I can see it. But you're just above the game. The inclination is to look down on the field. You watch the game on the field while I watch the monitor. And I never know how play-by-play guys operate. You know, should I be watching the monitor? Should I be watching? You know, should I be watching the action on the field? What do? Go back and forth?
I watch the action on the field. If I'm looking at balls and strikes, I may look at the monitor, but I'm more apt to follow the ball, because if you lose track of that, then you're in deep trouble. So I let my analyst do as much as he needs to do with an every pitch. And I try to focus more on, you know, where the ball is going. It's a combination of both, Bob. I mean, you gotta look at both, because we can't see
and that's,
you know,
hard
direction every
and that's
pitch.
Hard to do.
Yeah,
right?
Well, there are challenges. I mean, you get used to it. I'm not going to say it's brain surgery, but you get used to it.
Can I want to switch for a second and just talk a little about, because I can relate to where you've been in your career, which is many, many places. Like, I've been many, many places. I could never stay in one place for very long.
A few more coming too.
I'm sure I do. And I'm kind of, in fact, Dick Pertin once introduced me to an event and said, Eli's been to more stations than Mr. Goodwrench. Of course, that was back when Mr. Goodwrench was in the news. But when I look at what you've done and the years you got up to do morning radio on DFN, which starts at 6, you do late night TV on Fox Sports, you would do the WNBA, you do the CCHA. In fact, I didn't even know you dreamed up being a baseball guy, because you've done everything else. You've done Lions preseason. You've done about Eastern Michigan. Did you ever aspire to do any one thing, or did you do what I did? You kind of followed where the action was, and I kind of went into TV news because that's where the big money was, I thought at the time, and I wasn't going to get Ernie's job. But talk about the trek you've had across this landscape, and I don't think anybody can match the places you've been to or the number of sports you've done in Detroit.
And do you remember your first gig?
Yeah, my first gig was right out of Central Michigan. It was a small radio station in South Haven, Michigan, doing news and sports, working 6 days a week. I would do high school sports as well as news.
How much did they pay?
I got $12,000 for the year.
Oh my God.
And I quit that job to take a minor league baseball job for $800 a month. But in minor league baseball, what you have to do is you have to do more than just play by play. You have to sell.
Right.
You have to do everything. And it wasn't great. Charleston, West Virginia was not a great place for me. So I took almost half a year just making tapes and making copies of my resume so I could go down to the baseball winter meetings and hand out my resume tapes to every general manager I saw in baseball. I would venture that all of them were thrown away except for the one, right, that a guy called me on. But it just didn't work out. And then, you know, I ended up shoveling driveways, shoveling snow for a while before I got another opportunity to work in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, doing news and sports before coming back here to Detroit.
That's amazing.
It's been a long road, but, you know, my wife has been incredibly supportive. I've had a lot of family members who believed in me and a lot of people who took a chance on me. You know, I mean, WWJ, they took a chance on me when I was, you know, working in advertising. I was working at Ross Roy Advertising.
Jeez.
on the Sports Authority account, if you guys remember that. Yeah. and the GM Rewards account. And I would work Monday through Friday there, and then I'd work WWJ weekends. And I happened to get an opportunity with Fox Sports Detroit. An executive producer by the name of John Tuohy took a chance on me to do some pregame stuff. And then it kind of snowballed from there. And Eli, you know this, I went to the Palace and I worked for them for a long time doing a little Pistons, but mostly WNBA and the Vipers hockey and you know, just one thing after another. So what I think it's done, and you guys can relate to this, because radio more than anything else forces you to think on your feet. And you have to ad lib, and play by play, you must ad lib. When you're hosting a show or doing a sports cast, I don't use monitors. I don't use teleprompters. I ad lib everything. I base it from memory and just the information that I've been able to accumulate and stories that I have. I don't write that stuff down. Now, do I write stuff down for play by play of, you know, Jamer Candelario's had a 6-game hitting streak and batting 351? Yeah, absolutely.
It's in the notes.
Yeah. That's yeah. Well, not all the notes, but you have to, it forces you to be able to think on your feet a little bit quicker. And I think that's what, that's why it's really benefited me.
Yeah. And that's why you communicate so well. I never used a teleprompter on television. I ad-libbed everything. It makes it seem like you're having a one-on-one conversation with only one member of your audience. I'm glad you mentioned,
You know what else it forces you to do though, Bob? It forces you to listen. And, sure, and what I mean by that is if I'm at the desk with my co-host, let's say Dan Petrie or Craig Monroe, I've got to listen to them. If I'm thinking of what question is coming up next, I may miss a really good question based off his answer.
Don't you say that to young reporters. These high school kids will ask me, and I'll say the most important thing is to try and listen, because they'll ask you a question. You give them a great answer. They're not listening. They're just looking at their sheet for the next question,
right,
and they don't get to respond. And it's, oh, really? Well, would you elaborate on that a little bit? Very, very difficult. When, and any professional, you're able to juggle a few things at once, and that's
right. It's what Kirk Gibson does perhaps better than any analyst, you know, I've worked for. Rob Rubik does it really well. We've worked together for a long time. They listen to what I'm saying. So football, for example, I tell my analysts all the time, I'll take you to the ball. Just listen to it. Don't worry about looking at your flip chart and making sure, you know, it's Barry Sanders carrying the football. I'll take you to who has it and where it is. You just answer why. It's supposed to work in concert that way. Gibby does it really well.
I always do testing with Scripps Howard from time to time with their guys that they were trying to get through their school over there. Mm-hmm. And the first time I went over there, the kid started to interview me on the TV.
Specs Howard. Yeah, go ahead.
And he said, how is Jim Northrup doing? I said, Jim is doing good. He said, how's Norm Cash doing? I said, he's still dead. He said, how's Al Kaline doing? He said, did you hear about Norm?
Shep, I always say that we don't talk about the so-called Michigans enough on this show. We just do nothing but Michigan State. Yeah. Glad you mentioned Central. Mm-hmm. Paul Carone, you may know Paul, longtime CNN producer and reporter, now a news director. He tweeted me today. He says, Shep is another fine broadcast product of CMU. Did he call any sports during his time there, two years behind Paul? Did he ever host the school TV dance show?
Rodon. I don't think it was called that when I hosted it, but I did host that dance show. I did call every men's and women's basketball game on CMTV and baseball and football as well. Matter of fact, I used to tell people all the time, I never went to college football games when I was in college because I was calling them. And I've rarely gone to any football game as a fan because I'm always calling them. And that's okay too, because I love it. But look, I think what Central does better than anything else is it allowed me to work on the air right away. I know at other schools, it forces you to have at least 2 years of study under your belt.
Matt, that is so important. And look at the number of guys in this state. I tell kids, I've never been to Mount Pleasant, never seen CMU. If you're interested.
What?
I've never been to CMU and I've never been. But I tell people, look at the names besides Matt Shepard, Fred Heumann, Dave Llewellyn, the PR guys, the Terry Fosters, dozens.
And Eli, how about this name? Paul Carey. Paul went to Central Michigan.
That's right. That
is why, and I'm not going to knock Specs Howard. I don't know what they do now, but the point is, unless you get to practice, you can't learn to be a sportscaster in a classroom. You got to do it. And that must be why Central is the best, why they turn out more people, because they give you a chance to hone your craft while you're learning the book stuff that goes with it.
You got to get a chance to fail. Okay. I mean, that's just the way it is. We've all failed in life. All right. How do you respond to the failure? Central Michigan allowed you to go on the air. And if you didn't do a great job, it doesn't mean you'd lose your job. It just meant that you learned from it and you learned from failure. I think it's really important.
I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about one of your other many gigs, and that would be you're the radio play-by-play voice of Michigan basketball. Right now,
Not anymore.
Oh, I thought you were.
No, I was. I was for 15 years. But
Okay. Well, did you follow the program? What do you think Juwan's doing there? Are they going to be able to catch Tom Izzo?
I do follow the program a little bit from afar. I'm sure not as knee-deep in it as I was before. I was a little surprised that David DeJulius transferred. I thought he was going to be a really good player there.
Yeah.
I know he gets, you know, higher star players than John Beilein does, but, and Juwan Howard is doing the best he can, and he's got a really good staff. You know, it's really tough to beat what Izzo has done at Michigan State, because I think it's a top 6-7 basketball program every single year. What John Beilein did in Ann Arbor, I don't think anybody saw it coming. I think a lot of people thought they were going to give up on him way too soon, and they didn't recognize how good of a coach he is. You have to be a really, really good coach to win in that conference, because of all the other coaches and because of all the high recruits that go to either Michigan State, Indiana, or Ohio State. Look at the coaches when Beilein was there and when I was calling most of the Michigan games. Think of all the great coaches in that conference. They're phenomenal, phenomenal coaches. And I mean, like, Fran McCaffrey's a really good coach. But Iowa, you look at it and they're like, oh, okay, yeah. Iowa's okay, right? I mean,
and Tim, you know what? Tim Miles was a good coach at Nebraska. It wasn't his fault that they couldn't win. It's Nebraska basketball.
Well, I don't think it's fair to say it wasn't his fault. He's the coach. He's the one who's got to recruit the players. What he did there is he relied a lot on junior college players, and you have a tendency with those to roll the dice, and he rolled the dice a number of times and couldn't get it done with those guys. You're in order to build a program there or in this conference, you're going to have guys who are either multi-talented that you can live with the one and done, which Nebraska could never do, or you're going to have to get guys who you're going to have to live with and help them grow a little bit, and they want to be there. And he didn't get those guys either, or at least not nearly enough of them.
But the key to all of it is recruiting and the ability to recruit. Nobody does it better than Izzo.
Yeah.
From a basketball standpoint, I would agree. Here's what a friend of mine within the conference once told me. He said, look at your roster. We were talking Michigan and the team he called for. He says, look at your roster. Where are all these guys from? And I said, yeah, I get it. You know, we mentioned off the number of states. He says, none of those kids from those states ever go, gee, I would love to go to this school. It's not a destination school. Michigan is a destination school. So kids from California and Texas, and my oldest son went there and graduated in 4 years. Kids go, they'll be out west or out east, and they'll say, what's one of your favorite schools you want to go to? I want to go to Michigan. People don't say that about Illinois.
That's quite true.
And with all due respect to Illinois, it has its strengths, right? But people, there's kids growing up in Houston, Texas, Los Angeles, California, Brooklyn, New York, who say, man, I would love to go to Michigan one day.
Yeah. And yet it hasn't worked real well for Jim Harbaugh. A lot of people are really pissed about what's going on with Michigan football.
Yeah, well, I get it. I mean, I'd be upset too, considering the facilities that he has. There's really no excuse at Michigan. If you've seen their new facilities, you'll recognize just how much of an advantage they have over everybody else. Now, is it so much better than Nebraska's weight room? Not necessarily. Ohio State's in the process of building something really big, but go to Ann Arbor. I don't know when the last time you guys went to Ann Arbor, go to Ann Arbor and see their facilities. You'll be blown away. I mean, it's better than any NBA, any National Football League, any professional sports program out there. It's incredible what U of M has at its disposal.
Well, Matt, appreciate you joining us. Big series coming up with Minnesota.
We're done.
Well, unless I know you got lunch coming up in 15 minutes. I don't want to
be somewhere Saturday.
We could talk. We could talk to you for a long time. But again, Saturday. Congratulations on the long and winding road that brought you to a dream job. Proud to have you in the neighborhood. Proud to be a fellow sports reporter of you, with you. And thanks for joining us today. And
we'll keep watching.
And remember this, Matt, we have a little bit of fun with you from time to time on the show. I'm sure you've heard it.
We play some of your home run
nothing
calls.
Nothing personal. We enjoy
that's okay.
you.
Hey,
we all listen to you. We
that's
all
what it is,
you,
man. So.
But
that's
keep up the good work.
I will say, every time we have kind of joked at one of your home run calls, I said, but understand how much respect I have for Matt Shepard and the path he has taken to get to this place. You deserve it. You work
you
hard.
You do deserve it. And you certainly do.
I'll see you in the neighborhood, and thanks for joining us.
All right, good friends. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Shep. Really appreciate it.
You bet.
Okay. By the way, did his dog, Eli's dog, ever poop in your yard?
No, but he does not carry a baggie. I can tell you.
Don't tell me that. Don't tell me. Don't say that. That's not true at all. That's too funny.
All right, see you guys.
Take care, Matt. Eli, so you know what day it is now. You got to hold on this. So what are you going to do? You're going to wish everybody a happy weekend.
Well, yes, I am going to wish. So it's not Monday, right? It's Thursday.
It's not Monday. Not? You messed that up on Monday.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll see you again.
Hey, listen, start taking Prevagen.
All right. Monday, it will be the Labor Day, and we'll do a show that day as we always do.
So and we're going to be talking to Detroit native and longtime Major League catcher Ernie Witt on Monday.
Okay. You see you all then.